Time to get the local view. He's the columnist for the Register Guard. Catch his work on the front page of the sports section. You could also catch up using registerguard.com. Follow on Twitter. The handle is at AustinMeekRG. Austin, how you doing?
Hey, Steve, I'm good. I'm glad that you were able to locate me on my new cell number. I have this new area code, this 458 area code. I think I might be the only person who has this area code. I might have it all to myself, but I'm glad that you were able to reach me.
You do, and you made the perfect reference, the Seinfeld episode, when Elaine got the old woman's apartment and got a 646 area code instead of 212. And seriously, I know how people are. How much grief are you taking every time you give this number out?
Oh, every single person. Every single person I've given this number to is like, 458, where do you live? Do you live in Alaska? It's kind of ridiculous. And yeah, this is actually a phone that I got through the Register Guard, through my employer, so I didn't have any say in what the number is. And if I had had a say, I might have pushed for the old 541. I kind of like the 541, but I'll have to get used to it.
Yeah, so I'm not 100% sure it's you, so we'll keep going along.
Yeah.
You know, I honestly, I saw in the comments section after your article on Sunday, somebody discussed your article, and it was fantastic. I mean, obviously, it tugs at the heartstrings, the story of Jenny Eggers, her dad, a longtime college basketball official, and she gave birth to a baby boy a few weeks ago and then horrifyingly died shortly after. And this man, Mike Eggers, you wrote about it. I mean, the contrast, how is he able to deal with the ultimate joy of becoming a grandparent and then losing your daughter?
Yeah, this was a really sad story. Mike Eggers was a longtime basketball official in the Pac-12. I'm sure the people who have watched Pac-12, Pac-10 basketball have seen him. You know, maybe wouldn't recognize the name, but I'm sure would recognize the face, because he 40-some years he was a basketball official on the West Coast, and his daughter Jenny was a high jumper at the U of O in the late 90s, graduated from the U of O, moved to New York, and gave birth to her first child a couple weeks ago, and then tragically passed away shortly after. So I'd come into contact with Mike and had heard a little bit of the story, and obviously just a real tragedy for that family, real heartbreaking story. And, you know, most of us just can't comprehend what that would be like, to have the joy of having a new grandchild come into the world and then in that same span of a couple hours have the grief of losing a daughter. It's just hard to comprehend.
Yeah, you mentioned that she had moved to New York before 9/11, took a job in marketing, and actually wrote a piece a couple of years back for the New York Times. What inspired that article, and what were some of the things, I guess, that Jenny had come to understand about her dad, you know, and the job he did for, like you said, more than four decades?
Well, it was a really neat relationship they had, and she had a really interesting perspective on what it was like to grow up as the daughter of a basketball official. And she had been able to take a road trip with her dad a few years ago, where they went to three arenas in 3 days, and she was able to sit on press row and write about what the experience was like watching her dad work, and turn that into an essay that ran in the New York Times. And you know, it's just one of the sort of cruel ironies of it is that, you know, when you're a referee's kid, everything is fair, right? You grow up with the idea that, you know, the calls always even out and nobody's playing favorites, and you know, there's just this sense of inherent fairness to life. But then something like this happens and you realize, oh, you know, sometimes life just really isn't fair.
No, and like one of the readers said in the comments section, amazing piece, but get ready to feel things. So, folks, if you can, catch up. And as awkward as radio can be, we're going to move to another subject. Pitchers and catchers are reporting spring training time. MLB has ideas, I notice. Let's start with the first one. They're talking about raising the strike zone above the knees, and the theory is higher strike zone means more guys hack than take. What do you think?
On this one, I don't have a strong opinion. Some of the others I do. On this one, I guess I would need to see some data. My first gut level reaction is, why? Why do we need to mess with it? The strike zone has been like this since, what, Abner Doubleday? Does it really need to be reinvented right now? But maybe there's a compelling argument for it. I mean, we all do like to see guys swing the bat, something that could cut down on walks and have a few more balls put in play, I suppose, would help the game. But I would need to see some numbers to be convinced that it actually would accomplish that.
Next up, so we get to extra innings, and we get the MLB version of the Kansas rule. Rather than let them be extra baseball innings, you know, let's get to the scoring. So then they're talking about putting a runner on second base. Thoughts on that one?
It's kind of like baseball looked at NFL overtime and said, you know, that's terrible, but how can we do something that's even worse? I don't understand the logic of this. To me, you know, anything in overtime that seems unnatural or manufactured is a problem, which is why I don't like the NFL overtime, because it's confusing and it's different from the rest of the game, and it doesn't make sense to people. And I feel the same way about this. I mean, I know that people complain about the length of baseball games. Personally, I don't understand what the big deal is. You know, does anybody really say, oh, there's too much baseball being played in the world? Like, what else are you going to do? Are you going to get on Facebook? Are you going to watch CNN? You might as well watch baseball. I don't mind an 18-inning baseball game, and I certainly don't want just randomly putting some guy on a random base to try to speed the game up. I think that's stupid.
Although, if they were going to do it, the one guy who I think on ESPN tweeted out, only if the guy on second is Benji Molina. So,
okay, that could be a little bit entertaining. It has to be your slowest guy. Put your slowest guy on second base and have him try to score on a single. That actually could be entertaining.
All right. What about, so then they address the intentional walk, and they're like, well, the heck with throwing four pitches. Just put the guy on first, even though there are incidents. Pitch gets away, it gets bounced, or the batter swings if it's too close to the strike zone. What was your read on that one?
I mean, again, is it like the 30 seconds that it takes to throw four balls for an intentional walk, is that really the problem? Like, would baseball really move that much faster if you take away those four pitches? I mean, to me, the big problem is pitching changes and too much time between pitches. And I don't know how you cut that down. You know, can you put the pitchers on more of a strict clock where they have to work a little faster? I mean, you can't tell managers not to change pitchers. I mean, pitching changes are part of the game, but that's what slows it down. And, you know, we should point out, you know what else slows it down is replay. And I'm not a big replay guy. I don't like it that much. And when you're, you know, spending 5 minutes to determine, did the guy's foot come off the bag 1/100th of an inch, that's dumb. If you want to speed baseball up, get rid of the replay and go back to the way it was.
All right, we're talking with Austin Meek of the Register Guard. So last night, UConn beat South Carolina 66-55. That's 100 straight wins for Gino Auriemma and the Huskies. Some people have tried to, I don't know, place this. Is it equal to UCLA's 88 in a row in basketball? Oklahoma's 44 in a row under Bud Wilkinson in football? Can you debate a number? So what's your take on the UConn women? They've won 100 straight games.
Well, I think it absolutely has to go down as one of the great winning streaks in American sports, no question. You know, how you compare it to John Wooden's winning streak at UCLA, it's hard to compare it, but no matter how you spin it, 100 straight in any sport is really impressive. Not to get too nerdy about it, but you know, there's this concept of cumulative probability, which says that if you take something that in and of itself is very likely to occur and you do it over and over and over again, it's hard to make it happen every single time. So I saw this stat, it was kind of interesting. So if UConn was a 95% favorite in every game, had a 95% chance to win every game, the odds of winning 100 in a row still would be less than 1%. It's just, you know, mathematically, in terms of probability, the chances are, even if you're a huge favorite, you're going to lose at some point. So to win 100 in a row is just an incredible achievement. And, you know, we can debate the quality of the competition, and it's kind of unfortunate, I guess, that, you know, in some ways, maybe the impressiveness of it gets taken away a little bit by the, you know, debate about the competition and the conference they play in and all that kind of stuff. But no matter who you're playing, no matter who the sport, 100 in a row is pretty amazing.
November 17th, 2014. I tell people, just hold your breath that long and tell me it's not an amazing streak.
Yeah.
So on Saturday, we got the Selection Sunday Committee on TV. They revealed their top four seeds in the four regions. And the odd thing I thought was, you know, the major conference teams still have 7 to 10 games left. And beyond getting us to watch it and talk about it, what's the value a full month before the big dance even starts?
Well, I think you identified the value, and I guess we're giving them what they want by talking about it. I mean, I certainly didn't make a point to watch this. It was not something that I really had on my radar. I don't see any real purpose for it, aside, I guess, from trying to copy what the College Football Playoff Committee is doing and maybe generate a little bit of buzz around the tournament. But I thought Steve Mims wrote something and made a good point about how, you know, even the college football playoff rankings, which are pointless in themselves, like, at least you get a week to sort of think about it before it changes. But this, it's like, as they're releasing this, teams are losing, so it's outdated almost by the time that they get it up on the screen. You know, I just don't think that there's any real value in it aside from generating maybe a little bit of conversation.
Yeah, well, I always say they want us to do this, they want us to do that, and lo and behold, here I am talking about it. So
just a couple sheep, aren't we?
Yeah, there you go. Bah. All right, Austin, always appreciate the time getting us started on a Tuesday. Enjoy the rest of your week, and I guess I'll see you Thursday night at Matt Knight Arena.
All right, sounds good. Thanks, Steve.
Take it easy.